But first today, I'm joined by Colm Henry, Chief Clinical Officer of the HSE, who's joining us from our Cork studio to update us on the vaccination rollout after what was by any measure a roller coaster week. Good afternoon, Colm. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Good afternoon.
Let's start with the good news. That extra 545,000 doses from the Pfizer vaccine that we're now told will begin to arrive from Monday week. Are we confident now, Colm, that we will get that in the 50,000 batches week on week for that period?
Certainly increasingly confident, Katie. It is good news, especially coming on the news we received earlier over the AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson vaccines. So, yes, we're increasingly confident. If you look at the supply lines of Pfizer, they certainly have been less subject to disruption than the supply lines and the deliveries from AstraZeneca. So we're hopeful that we'll be seeing those deliveries coming in bunches of 50,000 vaccines per week from the end of April onwards, and we'd be able then to direct them towards those groups to whom this vaccine has been given, and that is under the latest allocation sequence to all those under 60 years of age, and of course as dose two to the over 70s who are well into their vaccination schedule now.
And I think people are so bamboozled by the numbers now, Colm, will that effectively bring us back on track in terms of our rollout targets?
Hopefully, yes. Certainly, we had to do some furious remodelling this week with the news we had about AstraZeneca. So we're certainly hopeful that with this extra delivery of Pfizer, as I said, we'll be able to direct it towards those most needing of groups first. That's older people with second dose vaccine, and those less than 60 as we go down, and then and that will bring us back on track. But it's a little early to say, but certainly it puts us in a much better position than we were a couple of weeks ago.
And we know the HSE facility for booking COVID-19 vaccination appointments open to 67 year olds today. What is your advice now to people out there who are in this 60 to 70 age cohort who may have genuine reservations about taking the AstraZeneca vaccine?
Well, I understand people having reservations because when they read the stories of this unusual clotting disease, it can cause distress and anxiety. And of course, there's no medication, there's no vaccination, it doesn't have a side effect. But the evidence is overwhelmingly in favour for these people in this age group that the vaccine affords great protection. And that's not just the evidence that's coming through from the trials, it's the real world evidence. And we're seeing evidence come through, particularly from the UK, where there's been widespread use of this vaccine, of a huge drop in hospitalisations and serious illness in all age groups, including older age groups, with the AstraZeneca vaccine. And in addition, we're seeing evidence that supports the idea that there might be reduced transmission of the virus, reduced asymptomatic carriage of the virus among these groups. So it is. I would advise anybody who's listening, who's offered this vaccine, take the vaccine. You have much, much more to fear from the virus and the serious illness it can cause than from what is a very rare side effect, so far predominantly appearing in younger age groups associated with the AstraZeneca vaccine.
If you do, though, still have those reservations, you refuse to accept the AstraZeneca, will you go to the back of the queue, as in the words of the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar?
Well, our aim is to vaccinate as many people as we can, and we want to reach as many people as we can in this decade to give them individual protection, and also in turn, hopefully, to reduce transmission as the evidence builds up that that's in fact what vaccines can do. So I would encourage anyone, we're not in a position to offer an alternative vaccine to this age group at the moment. There's huge benefits, substantial benefits in terms of reducing serious illness for people in this age group, and I would encourage them to take the chance. Book for the vaccine, get covered, get protected.
But just to be clear for those people, if they don't take it now, when they're offered it, when they at this point, that it may be some time before it swings around to them again and they're offered another vaccine.
To be clear to your question, Katie, we're not in a position to offer an alternative vaccine at this stage, no.
What about healthcare workers? They're due to receive their second dose of AstraZeneca shortly. Would you be concerned now that you may come across some hesitancy there as well, particularly with the younger workers in that cohort?
Of course, and I can understand this because, again, if you look at this age cohort, younger people especially, they may think to themselves, well, they have much less to fear from the virus. They're much less likely to become seriously ill, to be admitted to hospital, to require intensive care and so on. And they'll look at the side effect, which is very rare, by the way, this rare clotting event occurs in between 4 and 10 cases per million in based on the data we have so far. So I can understand people's anxiety, particularly if they're quite young, in their 20s or 30s, about getting a second dose. What I would say are two things. First of all, NIAC has advised that the second dose be protracted out to 16 weeks to allow us time, to allow them time, along with other regulatory agencies throughout Europe, to look at any evidence on the relative safety of a second dose. And based on the data we have so far, again, predominantly from the UK, this very rare side effect is predominantly associated with the first dose. Based on about 20 yeah. million doses given in the UK, an assessment of 100 serious side effects, 99 were associated with the first dose and one was associated with the over 1 million doses, the second doses. So now this evidence will build up in the coming weeks.
And yeah, because they're just getting to a lot of their second doses correct. Over there now, aren't they?
Correct. And I would emphasise that the evidence needs to build up, hence NIAC's advice to protract out that second dose to 16 weeks to give us more time to build up more evidence so that we can give the right advice. And safety has to be at the forefront of this programme.
Okay.
The vaccination programme is based on confidence and safety, and we want people to take the vaccine up and we want them to feel secure in taking the vaccine that is right for them.
Okay, so we're keeping a watching brief basically on
yes.
that. The other issue that's in the front of the papers today, the Irish Independent reporting that the health that there's going to be a move to extend the gap between receiving a first and second dose of Moderna and Pfizer from to up to 8 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks. What is your clinical assessment of that?
Well, to be clear, people are looking at the possibility of this, but no decision has been made. To reassure anybody listening today that the gap that remains there at the moment for Pfizer vaccine, 28 days. It is, of course, authorised or licensed to go up to 42 days. But beyond that, and we know that the UK, particularly again to reference that country, they opted for a strategy to cover as much of the population as they could with dose ones, at the expense perhaps of not covering everybody with dose twos within the vaccination schedule. And that's a strategy that they chose to pursue. I think it's too early for us to say we're going to pursue that strategy. We have to look at the medical evidence. There is growing real-world evidence of substantial protection after the first dose of all vaccines in terms of hospitalisation and serious illness. As to how protracted and sustained that protection is, we can't be sure. And of course, people want to achieve that goal of being fully vaccinated because of all the benefits that may bring in time. So I would say we're looking at the evidence now. No decision has been made, and to be clear about that, Katie, to anybody who's listening.
I appreciate that, and it's important to say that, of course, but it's being reported that the health advice recommending an extension of the gap is going to go to Cabinet on Tuesday.
That's not our current position, no. To be clear about this, the Pfizer vaccine is currently a 28-day gap. It is licensed or authorised up to 42 days, but no medical advice has yet been crafted to give to government to extend this beyond what we currently apply.
Which is 28 days.
Yes.
Okay, the next one, again, front of the paper this morning, this time at the Irish Times, that Health Minister Stephen Donnelly has asked his department officials to assess the possibility of younger age groups being vaccinated earlier than others. I saw Paul Reid just there in the last hour confirming that the HSE hasn't been involved in discussions in relation to this. What's your sense of this, Colin?
Well, I've heard arguments and I listen to a lot of experts over the vaccination programme. We've all learned to listen to them because they're the people who know best about this, and not just in this country, beyond and internationally. And of course, an argument has been made that if you want to reduce transmission, if that's your primary goal, that you should hit that section of the population who perhaps are more at risk for transmitting the virus onwards. Hence the argument for focusing on younger people. But to be clear about this, if you look at the experience of our country and other countries, and anybody who's worked in the hospital system or nursing homes the past week would have seen the devastation caused by COVID in terms of death, illness, serious illness, admission to ITU and long COVID syndrome. And these consequences of this virus predominantly are sharply associated with age. There is no doubt about that. So if the primary focus of our vaccination programme is to reduce harm, then we need to focus, as we have done, on residential care settings, as we have done on those over 70, as we are now doing in those with age 60, 69, as we are now doing in those with serious underlying conditions that puts them at particular risk, and then in decreasing our order of age. Because what we've learned the past year is that the risk for somebody in their 60s or indeed in their 50s of hospitalisation, death or ITU admission is substantially greater than somebody in their 20s.
Yes, but I suppose that the point is that once you get the over 50s done, do you then look at infection rates generally and how to attack those on that basis?
Well, as I say, there is an argument, and that argument will have to be underpinned by solid evidence. And in fairness, it is increasing that there's evidence that the vaccine does reduce transmission. If I could reference briefly, Katie, one study in the UK showing that household contacts of vaccinated healthcare workers had much lower disease levels than household contacts of unvaccinated healthcare workers. So there's building evidence that the vaccines do reduce transmission. But the overwhelming evidence in terms of where a vaccination programme should focus is on harm reduction based on on individual risk to older people, to those with underlying conditions, and of course to our healthcare system, which has borne the brunt of three surges now since February and March of last year.
So in your view, what I'm sensing from you, do you think we should stick with the plan as we have it?
Well, I think it's a valid question to ask, and I know it's not just been asked by us alone, but I think we have to look at the evidence. We have to look at where we best focus this precious resource at this stage. I'm saying at this point in time, the experts I listen to inform me, and that includes people in NIAC, that we're best to focus on harm reduction through an incremental approach to age, working downwards. And if the evidence comes to light that when we reach a certain point in age, that we can then switch to hitting transmission, because the evidence supporting the vaccine stopping transmission builds up as it is, well then of course we can the allocation strategy can be changed.
Okay, and ultimately I presume this would be come from NIAC, the advice on a change of this.
Ultimately NIAC will advise government and the government will advise us, and we and as has happened to date is we will respond to the advice that comes through from NIAC through government, and however difficult that my advice may be to put into operation.
Can I ask you then about the vaccine registration system that we now have in place? There's a report in the Irish Independent today that system allows people to claim a false age when they register. There's nothing there to stop you from making yourself older, I suppose, if you wanted to go jump up in the queue. Would you be worried that some people might be doing this?
Well, certainly it would be disturbing to think that anybody would try to falsify their details to get onto a vaccination
program. We've seen a fair bit of queue jumping so far.
Yes, I understand. But to be clear about this, when people then turn up for vaccination, they're then going to have to show evidence to support whatever evidence they logged on.
And is that the case, that they won't get a vaccine unless they have ID showing that they are who they are and the age they are?
Absolutely. So however people want to behave in terms of misrepresenting their age, and I expect it's not that common, but if it is happening, the same people will have to give the same support of evidence when they turn up for vaccination. And we see a huge uptake now. I think approaching 70,000 people have registered in this portal today. It's showing a big uptake despite what concerns people may have about the vaccine. It shows people want to get vaccinated, understand the benefits, and that's just going down incrementally through the 69, 68 and 67 year old people. So we're seeing a big uptake and big enthusiasm for this vaccine.
And can I ask you then about the question of maternity hospitals? And, you know, there was a lot of concern and upset around the fact that partners were not being allowed in to attend scans, particularly the 20-week scan and labour and, you know, people having to labour alone. What is, if you could just clarify, the current situation in hospitals now?
Yes, to be clear about this, there is some degree of confusion over this, Katie, and it gives me the chance, asking me the question gives me a chance to clarify that. Our advice nationally has been clear, and that is that we recognise a huge distress, that absence of visiting for particular groups, including nursing homes and, of course, women who are pregnant. So what we have said in our advice is that people should have a partner with them for the 20-week anomaly scan that people would be familiar with, and they should have a partner with them when they're in labour, and that parents should be able to visit neonatal intensive care units should the newborn child be unwell. Of course, the caveat there are two things. First of all, that people understand this, that the strict adherence to infection prevention and control measures are observed wherever they visit. And secondly, that in times of great threat to hospitals, such as we saw in January, where in some hospitals we had multiple outbreaks and where there were closure of services, there may be a temporary suspension of visiting rights based on local risk assessment. But the national advice is very clear to all our maternity units is that a partner should be with the woman at the anomaly scan and when they go into labour in the hospital.
Okay, I'm sure that'll come as a great comfort to a lot of people who are going through pregnancy at the moment. Can I ask you, just as we were talking there, Colm, We've had a number of questions all on the same theme. So if you'll bear with me, I'll just put a couple of them to you by email and by text. Katie, please ask Colm Henry about the fear of the South African strain, only 10% efficacy with AstraZeneca vaccine for the over 60s. I have another texter in here. Hi, Katie, just listening to all the talk. No, sorry, this is the one. Not so much worried about the clotting, more about the efficacy, especially against the South African variant. This is from Irene Cohen, who's 67 years old. Is that something that is concerning yourselves in the HSE, that this cohort, who are still very vulnerable if they were to get sick, has a low efficacy when it comes to the this new variant?
Well, the variants, particularly the P1 and the 351 variants, are of concern to us because of the association they have with weakening the antibody response to this famous spike protein. So, of course, we're fearful, hence the measures that have been brought in to government to try and slow down the entry of these variants into our state and to slow down the spread once they enter our state. And the numbers are relatively small so far, and they're vigorously and doggedly followed up by our public health departments. But there is some evidence of reduced, in the particular mutation these variants carry, of reduced, of increased resistance to the vaccine. One study showed a resistance, particular inability to reduce mild and moderate disease. But there still remains substantial evidence that the more serious more serious illness is prevented by the vaccine, notwithstanding the fact that there's greater resistance to the vaccine among these strains. Our approach has to be, of course, number one, is to try and slow down the spread of these variants, both in entering the country and spreading within the country. And secondly, to proceed through vaccinating as much of our population, particularly vulnerable groups, particularly those in those age groups, as quickly as possible, so as to reduce the chance of that mutation spreading within these groups and to afford them the greatest possible protection.
And just before I let you go, Colm, this idea that we may need booster shots, I saw the CEO of Pfizer coming out this week saying that in as little as maybe 6 to 9 months, there may be a requirement for a booster shot to deal with these variants.
So what we know to date, Katie, is that the antibody response, that's the immune response when people get naturally infected, sustains for about 6 months. There are other elements of the immune response which perhaps last longer. And that tells us when people get naturally infected, they've got some kind of protection for 6 months and perhaps longer. And our expectation is, it's too early for us to say with the vaccine how long the response will be. It may well be that we'll be entering a scenario like the flu vaccines where people need a booster shot every year or every 2 years. It simply is too early for us to say. I saw that statement made by the CEO of Pfizer. Our own experts here at NIAC and Karina Butler and will be liaising with their colleagues in Europe to determine in time whether or not people require a booster dose, and if so, what the schedule should be. And it's simply too early to say.
OK. Colm Henry, Chief Clinical Officer of the HSE, many thanks for joining us this morning. We leave it